We're WSA, and we are in the business of designing environments that work. We create workplaces for all sorts of people, and we've always learned a lot by listening. Why? Because architects who listen are people who design, really design, for others, for everyone, and for all of us. This podcast is about what designers hear when they listen carefully to what people want and what people need. Welcome to Workplace Crafted. Hello, and welcome back to Workplace Crafted, to continue our journey to explore the future of design in a post-pandemic environment. I'm Tim Hawk, your host, and this podcast is a production of WSA, a multidisciplinary design firm in the Midwest. In today's episode, we hold a discussion with Lauren Miller, a design leader with WSA, and we begin our journey to explore the many aspects of our unique research-based design process, TalentArc. It's a new year, 2024, and we have a chance to begin to double down on our commitment to design innovation. But how do we deal with design trends and fads? Is a fad worthy of our attention, or is it just too fleeting to pay attention to? And how do trends become movements? How do designers make decisions when we're charged with designing environments that work? These are all very good questions and worthy of discussion and consideration. After all, the stakes are really pretty high, with lots of dollars at risk, not to mention the success of the organizations we serve. I hope you enjoy this episode, and I encourage you to join the conversation throughout the next few months as we explore design process from many different angles. Each are important, and these conversations contribute to how we shape the TalentArc design process. Design can be fleeting. I think stylistic tendencies in design and trends or fads in design are becoming more rapid in terms of the way that they begin to create change within design. So like as an older person, it might have taken like 3 to 5 years previously, and now it seems like with the Internet of Things, you can almost have a design change occur from a standpoint of a trend in like a month. Or with social media influencers causing design change to modify itself in like an hour. I mean, that's a little ridiculous. So what do you think are the key design trends that have been emerging? Not at that pace of rapidity, but generally emerging.
Yeah, I don't think I'm saying anything revolutionary here, but some of the design trends that we've been continuing to see over the past few years have really been rooted in that sustainability movement, as well as kind of this human wellness. And I think a lot of those quick fads that we're referring to are actually indicative of the bigger trends. So there might be a fad for, I don't know, I'm throwing this out there, like, you know, felt baffles up in a ceiling somewhere. And yeah, that might be a fad. You can look back and say, yeah, that was definitely 2023 that those were installed, but they were indicative of a bigger trend, which was well-being of the humans in space. So it's the trend was that we were trying to provide a better space for health and well-being of the people in there. So I think with those trends, we can look back and we know that sustainability is truly a trend and not a fad. And we know that this push for health and well-being is a trend and not a fad, because we're seeing more than just products reflect those movements.
You might actually look at like the history of architecture and recognize that that which may be perceived as a fad, the sustainability movement, actually was talked about 100 years ago. So like I think of the Spanish flu pandemic in 1918 and how that impacted design. In my opinion, it sort of brought out the international style. It stripped things of wall covering and that kind of stuff. So that discussion has been occurring, and it is manifest in design for forever, right? So the point is, how does one distinguish whether is something is a fad related to that trend, which is a constant, or is it ethical or right to sort of catch on to trends, like, or to, excuse me, to fads?
I think specifically when talking about a sustainability trend or the well-being trend, those are born from societal movements. Like you just said, like there's already a push for these changes outside of the design world. And when it is benefiting both, you know, our clients and the environment, when we're talking about these, of course, it's ethical for us to grab onto them and run with them. I think what we have to be cautious of is that we don't forget everything else while we react to those fads and trends, and that we let it, you know, build up what we're working on instead of detract from what we're working on. And I think that's kind of a conversation about, you know, timeless architecture versus fads versus trends. And it's a balance of those. So it's all, you know, project specific, site specific, your client specific, about kind of what we root in that timeless world and what we allow to be a part of a trend or a fad. You know, maybe we talk to clients about things that they like aesthetically, let's say, and it might be a fad. It could be environmental graphics. It might be the logo of your company. Like those things are adaptable over time. Those things like furniture pieces that we will try to keep as long as we can, but we know that they have a life cycle of 15 years versus a building, the actual architecture, the structure of a building, we want to last forever. So is it the pieces that last forever that need to hold that timelessness and allow for the flexibility of what goes in it, the people that go in it, to change over time?
But if you look at our recent history in architecture, we do have buildings who followed fad. So you can look at the work of Gehry, or look at the work of Daniel Libeskind, or avant-garde architects like that. And they do, when you look at their buildings, I mean, you're going to be able to say that the Walt Disney in Los Angeles by Gehry was designed in 2010 or whenever it was, right? Like in 100 years, you're going to know that that's a period. So is that a fad?
I think that's more of a trend. There's like, I think when I think of fads and trends, fads are that like by the year, by the month, by the day, by, you might not even know looking back on it, like what or who it stood for. And it was kind of indicative of a bigger movement. Whereas like a trend could just be a style of architecture from a certain period of time. And of course you can grab onto that trend, but there kind of has to be a conversation with your client, whether it's Disney World or whether it's, you know, a government building or whether it's somebody's home. You know, what in 20 years, what do they want to look back on it and say like, oh, this is a sculptural piece. You know, this is very indicative of a place and a time. And it's those conversations, and it's all in an effort so that in 20 years, if somebody was sick of it, you know, we're not ripping it down. It can withstand the test of time in that way, that it can be a snapshot in time. And you also look at other architects that are, including us, that are pushing really hard for the reuse and even like radical renovation of buildings to bring them to a specific place in time, whether it's because they're dilapidated or because they didn't have a character that anybody was like beholden to or like really excited about. So yeah, I think if you want to be a part of, if your building wants to be part of a trend, I mean, what does timeless even mean? You look at something and there's clearly a time and a place that it was kind of birthed and came into effect.
So given that, which is very interesting because it is what we're really passionate about here at WSA, this issue of building reuse, and how do you, as a designer, make decisions about what should change in a renovation or an adaptation and what should stay?
Interesting. I think that's a very difficult question to answer. I think it's project specific. And I think if something can be reused, if it hasn't reached the end of its life cycle, there is at least a push to leave it where it is or reuse it in some other way, either, you know, relocate it, repurpose it, reevaluate how it's being used. And that can go from anything from building materials to furniture, light fixtures. There's such a push for like disassembly. in architecture right now too, like the ability for after something has been installed for it to be uninstalled and reused again. So demountable walls are one of like the most prolific product versions of that that we see. Like the beauty of that is that, oh shoot, we actually don't love the layout of this building in 15 years. It doesn't fit what we need anymore. We can still use those same kit of parts, just pull it all apart and rebuild it. Furniture's that way too, right? Like modular systems. And I think from an architectural standpoint, we've even had clients where it's not even what can we reuse. The client came to us thinking they needed to build a whole new building. They wanted to go into a brand new office park, you know, where they can build 200,000 square foot of building. And we talked to them and realized that it's maybe not in their best interest. Either they already have a space that if we just modify how that space is delineated, they actually don't need to grow. Or, hey, what about these other buildings that we see when we drive around that we know are available? We've been talking to our real estate friends. We know that there's space for you in these locations. Why don't we go check those out? And so it's evaluating what is and isn't there in a building, I think, to figure out.
And it's case specific, right? It's yes. Very client-based. So you bring up something really interesting, which is the idea of prefabrication. And how that is that a trend or fad?
I think that's a trend.
So if that's a trend and we're going to be dealing with that, and I would suggest through artificial intelligence and other types of, you know, 3D printing of buildings and other types of technologies, we're going to see more prefabrication and more mechanized making. So if you're going to reuse it, doesn't it need to be more timeless in its style or application of design?
Yeah, either more timeless or just more accepted that it is of a specific time, I guess. But you do see, if you look at currently what's, you know, being offered from a product level of from furniture to prefabbed houses, et cetera, it is extremely simple. And it's meant to be that the things that you bring like personality or a style to it come within like an applique on it. So it's not necessarily the bones and the expensive pieces, parts of the prefab that are of an aesthetic, of a specific style. You have the ability to customize that after install. And the expensive pieces, you know, are what's more streamlined, simplified, and can be used in a variety of places.
So like the whole wall system would be able to be repurposed, but you could take components and aspects of it in order to update it, right? Just like you do a building. So I think of the massive implications of that, where you have basically more and more buildings being perceived as a kit of parts that is able to be easily reconfigured over time. If you begin to think about the future, and we just were sort of introducing ourselves to the future, let's keep on this idea of prefabrication and sustainability. How do you think, so I'm going to kind of skip back. Okay, we talked a little bit about design trends and stylistic periods. So I want to re-reference the modern movement. So the international style that developed in the 20s and 30s and then became totally prolific across the United States in the 50s and 60s, fell on a school of hard knocks. Like people felt it was cold, impersonal, and not actually relevant. And so we had a reactionary movement, the postmodern movement, et cetera. So as we begin to look now at prefabrication and other types of things, and we think about sustainability, one of the biggest complaints about the international style was its lack of respect for specific place. Yes. And sustainable initiatives. So talk a little bit about that. Like, what are your thoughts about the future of AI-generated, prefabricated building components and modular issues in relationship to the specific site-related demands of sustainability?
It's hard to look through a crystal ball and see what that really means. Yeah, go ahead.
If you had to do it like right now, just like gut instinct, what would be your, just like, what would you do?
What would I do in the future?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the beauty of AI is its capability not just to replicate, but to learn and know and produce more hyper-specific versions of what you're looking for. So in a world of prefab, where we're talking about the bones are, you know, there's only so many versions that this can be, right? And then you've got this kind of like AI version of being able to adjust those simple kit of parts. I think what we're going to see is this kind of like a hyper-specialized, I can't think of the word to give it right now, but customization. Yeah. And like super personal feeling places. So like, even if you look into like, if you look at interior design fads right now, right? Like we've gone from a hyper like black and white world of very like simple feeling inside somebody's home. Like we can look at how people decorate their homes to know like kind of what's coming next in terms of architecture movements too. They went from that to maximalist, right? Where like nobody's living room looks the same is what we're seeing these days. There's like lots of color specific to that person. The customization is around very specific instances. So that's why, I mean, even now we're not operating in the future, but how we're operating right now is we kind of have this like aggressive collaboration with our clients that we ask a million questions and we design a space for them specifically, but the bones of the building reflect a flexibility in them that allow for that hyper customization to not design them into a corner. So there's a world of ease and simplicity with a layer of customization on it that allows for that, you know, feeling of ownership over that place.
That's amazing. I feel like I've learned something from this conversation that we can apply immediately on projects. And I thank you for that. So if we're trying to talk about this in relationship to aspiring architects or new members of our WSA team or whatever, like, is that it? Is that what you say? Like, you have to understand how to be able to figure out and discern which components or elements need to be timeless and which are hyper customizable.
Yeah. And I think it comes back if you're looking at like, you know, a word that you're going to see in your ARE exams or whatever. There's a layer of complexity here about the things that you can change and you cannot, or that you don't want to change. It's all about life cycle. So it's when we are talking about those things, same with that prefab kit of parts that we're talking about, the life cycle of the light timeless pieces. Those are the pieces that are going to last forever and that we can use and reuse and maybe never even move. You know, they just live there. And then you have to compare it to the pieces that you know we can change, that we're allowed to change, that a client knows that they don't have to feel bad about changing in 20 years. So yeah, I think that's a huge thing that we push for when we're looking at core and shell, interior buildouts, all of that.
You've been listening to the WSA podcast series, Workplace Crafted. As we kicked off 2024 today, we've been discussing our research-based design process, TalentArc, and revealed some of the many considerations that make TalentArc unique. We invite you back for some robust conversations with members of the WSA design team, where you'll learn what makes them tick and how they influence design outcomes. Today's podcast was edited by Spencer Hawk, our podcast guru, so many thanks to him for his diligent work to make us sound our best, even when that seems impossible. And as always, thanks to our WSA clients who allow us to explore these topics through the design work that we do. We'll see you next time on Workplace Crafted, when we'll consider the impact of diverse viewpoints on the design process.